Everybody.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
This is Zach.
And this is Stuart.
And this is a book club episode.
Yep, of the Back Row Super Show.
We're just going to go through this book, Brandon Sanderson's Warbreaker.
Yes, this is a book I chose. I am going to have to take off my my bias glasses because I do really like Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah,
I like him as a writer. I like him as a person. I think that he's a really down-to-earth kind of guy.
Yeah, and I've never met him or anything like you have. I am not a fan of his writing.
Okay.
But I also took off my bias glasses for these.
Yeah.
Because it's a standalone. Normally
it
he
is.
Writes, like, he finished up Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time
he did.
Books.
He wrote the trilogy of Mistborn, but then he started writing In That World Again.
Yeah, Stormlight Archive, I think.
No, so his other series was set in, like, the Wild West, where he revisited, the Mistborn.
Is Mistborn a wild... I thought it was, like, a high fantasy.
Is it
like steampunk?
It is, but time has passed in that world.
Oh, so he's fast-forwarding then.
Yeah, kind of. Okay. I would have to spoil some things, which I'm not. And this is going to be an interesting book report.
Yes. So,
because what we're going to be doing is we're going to be going through sort of a synopsis of the book, but we're not going to spoil it until the very end. Because I will say Brandon Sanderson has a particular writing style. It's kind of becoming a little cliche now, where he usually puts a twist in his books.
Yeah.
Be them character twists or setting twists. There's usually some sort of turning point in the book where you're like, oh, that was a surprise that I didn't know.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of stay away from that surprise until the very end. We'll put up a spoiler thing. We'll say, hey, we're going to talk about spoilers, but that's going to be towards the end of the
podcast. We'll put in a spoiler wall with music, like a regular outro.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to that, if you don't want to hear any spoilers, this has not been adapted for another media property, and I don't think it's in the works for any. So
no,
we're going to do our casting session.
Yeah.
And kind of talk about that. So we'll get into spoilers there because that kind of bleeds into my reasoning, at least for some characters, as to why I would cast certain people if I were a casting director.
Exactly. So we're going to be spoiling it during us casting the characters.
Yeah.
So just a little bit of background on this particular book.
Yep.
It was published in 2006.
Oh, 2009.
Sorry.
Yeah.
2009. He started writing it in 2006.
Yeah, which is probably why you mentioned that, is that he put it on his website.
Yeah, so he had this theory that if he started putting up his notes, like his writer's notes, he started posting chapters of his book, of this book, on his website, and he had this theory that he would basically put this book out for free. People would love the story so much that they would go out and actually purchase the book.
Yeah, buy it collected. Because it was just a chapter at a time.
Yes, it was just a chapter at a time. It was on his website. So you'd basically, if you wanted to, build the book, you would have to copy it from his website into a Word document and build the book that way. It wasn't like a free e-reader where you could just download it on your Kindle and read it there. But, if you read chapter 1, 2, and 3, you'd be like, oh, wow, this is really good. Let me go out and buy the book when it's available.
Yeah.
Which did happen with me, because I used to frequent his websites. I saw his notes, which was great, because at that time I was also writing a little bit, and it was really interesting to see his thought process on his story building, his world building, and his magic system building. Because I will say, I think his world building is great. He's definitely kind of found his niche about, writing about gods and really powerful beings and things along those lines. And his magic system is really great.
Yeah,
I think his characters are a little weak.
They are. He's better, I think, at least in this book. I've only read one of the Mistborn books, and that's what turned me off, is that I didn't really... Yeah, I didn't really like the Mistborn.
Huh. Because that's what actually... Because
that's the magic system with, like, metal,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's okay, when so, you're basically taking a swig of metal, like water and metal, and then burning it within you.
Yeah.
Because that, the Mistborn series, is what got me hooked on Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah.
Because, just a little background, I used to work at a Barnes & Noble, and usually when we had paperbacks that needed to be returned back to the vendor, we would rip off the cover of the paperback and send that cover to the publisher.
Yeah, it's a remaindered book.
Yeah, saying that, you know, we've done away with these books. And occasionally, I don't know if this is 100% legal now that I'm talking about it, you could take one of those books.
So because it's going to be thrown in the trash.
Because it was going to be recycled
in the trash. And it's got no cover.
So I took one of his books. I loved it so much. I actually bought the book in...
Yeah, see, that's legal.
Yeah. And I met Brandon Sanderson at Dragon Con when he was going around. It was just when the Stormlight series came out.
Yeah.
I met him and I got him to sign my Mistborn. Oh, my cool. First one, yeah. Also, just a little bit about him, and then we'll start talking about Warbreaker. He is a person who actually frequents Twitch. So he has a Twitch account.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
He occasionally watches some people play video games. He is also a fan of Magic the Gathering. He'll watch some people play...
that's not surprising.
Yeah. he'll watch people play Magic on Twitch. And if he's on Twitch, you can really talk to him like a normal person and be like, hey, I really love your book, or like ask him some questions and stuff, and he'll usually respond on Twitch.
Okay.
Which is really cool, because I've seen him in a couple of Twitch chats when I've been watching people play Magic, and him just, like, communicating with people and talking about, like, particular book series, which I thought was really cool.
That is.
And it was really nice meeting him at Dragon Con, and it was really nice about signing my book.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and one of the things that I came across when I was reading about Sanderson online is, and this goes, again, back towards his world building, he has this idea of hard and soft magic systems where... I can't think of an example of a hard magic system outside of, like, maybe Forgotten Realms. Like, there are specific rules for it. It's kind of like hard sci-fi and soft sci-fi, where hard sci-fi would be, like, David Weber.
Harry Potter. Harry Potter is a hard magic system, because you need particular, I guess, incantation to cast spells.
I would think that is, like, in a medium.
I would say it was kind of hard, because you have to have, like... certain materials to cast spells. You need a wand to cast a spell. You need, like, a focus and things along those lines.
Well, yeah, and soft would be, like, Sword of Shannara or Lord of the Rings, where it's just, like, it's just kind of wavy gravy how you can kind of do things with magic.
Where Gandalf casts spells, and you don't know if there's a limit to spells that he can cast.
Or it's just because he's not human.
Yeah. So I think that the hard magic system... I prefer hard magic, probably over soft magic.
I'm the opposite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just because I like that kind of nitty-gritty thing. And this is why you might not like Brandon Sanderson as much, because he focuses on hard magic. There are rules to his magic system.
Yeah.
You cannot do certain things without fulfilling so many rules.
Yeah, and that's not to say that one is better than the other, because the thing that
it's just preference.
Well, and the thing that I read about him talking about it was, again, not saying that there's a preference, but just, like, commenting on how you can do both to world build, where, like, soft magic focuses more on characters, because you don't have to, like, abide by any necessary rule, whereas, like, hard magic, there's rules in place, so you have... there's a lot more nitty-gritty behind that rather than character necessarily.
Yeah, and I think that may be why some of the character development is lacking in his books, but I don't think it's to a point where it's really bad. I think it's some authors just are better character designers than him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, going to Warbreaker.
Yeah.
So, just a little bit of a synopsis of the book. There are four main characters, or five main characters, actually.
I have four.
Okay.
So basically the story, as I took it in,
mm-hmm.
was, there are two cities, or regions, I guess, in the country. It's not specifically clear if Halindrin is more than just one city, but there's Halindrin at the ports.
Yes.
And then
which is a nation.
Oh, it's a nation. It's a nation. Okay, gotcha. Yes. So, well, when I was reading it out, I was just thinking city.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got nation.
So it's kind of like a port area.
Mm-hmm.
Idris is a city or nation in the mountains.
Yeah, smaller nation in the mountain.
They control all the mountain passes. And you really only ever see these two locations.
Yes, yeah.
Even though there's a wider world.
Yeah. And
because one of the things that's important to notice in the kind of the political machination sections in Halindrin mm-hmm. is that the people there are concerned about Idris closing off the mountain passes for commerce. So
yes.
there is a world outside of this, because why would they give a shit if they closed off mountain passes?
And I think this world building is interesting. I think it's good. Because it does focus on these two nations, mm-hmm. but it focuses really well on them. It builds, like, their culture. Because they have very opposite cultures than from each other. So it really opens on Idris, and it talks about, two of the characters that I think are main characters are the two princesses.
Yeah, so Vivenna and Ciri. And yes. Vivenna is the older sister in the royal line in Idris.
Yes.
And
now they had a treaty, that she would be sent off to basically the god king of...
In Halindrin. Halindrin's religion is based a lot on colors and using color to cast magic in this is key.
Yes. So should we get into the magic system?
Not yet. Okay. Not quite yet. No. So in Halindrin, there are people called Returned who have died and come back to life, and their stature changes. And they're like 7 and 8 foot tall people.
Yes. So they die, but they die heroically or in some sort of, honored manner.
Yeah. So their whole religion is based off of this and the use of color to power magic. Mm-hmm. And the God King is kind of their person of power.
Yes.
And so the treaty involves one of the Idrian princesses being married to him to kind of retie that, because...
Between them.
In the history, it's interesting. One of the things in the history of this world is that Idris is a nation made up of people who were once part of Halindrin, but are basically rebels.
Yes.
And have broken from the monarch, or the theocracy that exists in Halindrin.
Yeah, because they both have differing views of what breath is.
Yeah.
So breath is the magic system.
Yeah.
So everybody starts off with one breath.
Yeah.
And they can be exchanged. So a person can give a breath to another person.
Mm-hmm.
When you do give up that breath, nothing really happens to you except colors become less visible.
Yeah, to you, and also you go a little bit paler, more monochromatic.
Yeah, you do, and you're a little bit more susceptible to diseases.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as people accumulate breath, there are particular thresholds, and it's interesting because Brandon Samerson sets up actual numbers.
Yeah.
Like, you can go to the, like, Wikipedia page of Warbreaker or his actual website.
Yeah, my copy of the book actually had it in the very back, where it looked like a D&D chart, where it's like, with 1,000 breaths, you hit the like, third awakening.
Yeah.
And you can do first these awakening. Things.
Yeah.
No, well, no, the first awakening is like 200.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And then it just ramps up from there. You can do more and more stuff. You can see more and more colors.
And you get buffs. Aura. You, like, you stop aging at a particular threshold.
Yeah.
You get more immunity from disease at a particular threshold.
Yeah.
And I really like that as, I don't know, as a person who likes hard numbers. To be like, oh, this is a particular number that you have to hit to get these benefits.
Which, I'm surprised this hasn't been adapted to a role-playing game.
I know,
maybe
I know.
We need to do that.
I know.
Let's write Brandon Sanderson and be like, can we adapt your thing to a game?
I mean, it's very ripe for role-playing games. But anyway, so you can accumulate breath. You can't force, like, physically force somebody to give you a breath. Like, you can't, like, steal it from them. They have to be willing to give you their breath.
But you can be forced to take someone else's breath, which is interesting.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Because
yes.
There's a special phrase that you say.
Yeah.
To like give someone your capital B breath.
Yes.
Which
a lot of people, so in Idrid, people think that it's your soul. And they view it as like, you're supposed to have one breath. You're not supposed to use it for this particular weird magic thing.
And then
and they have a very, their, I guess, stress is very, like, monocolored.
Yeah, it's very austere. It kind of matches the landscape that they're in. Whereas, you know, like in the mountains, you would want something more muted, whereas down in a port, you can just do whatever, right?
But so they feel breath is more of a religious sort of, like, your soul.
Yeah.
It's a very, you don't do anything with it, because once you have a particular amount of breath, you can actually do certain things.
Yeah.
So you can endow inanimate objects with breath.
Yeah.
And as you're doing that, you have to give it a command. So you could basically put breath into a rope and say, attach to the roof.
Yeah.
So the rope would attach to the roof. Or, in the book, a lot of people awaken their clothing and say, protect me.
Yeah.
So you'd basically have Doctor Strange's cloak where it's protecting you from particular things.
Yeah. And one of the cool things that I saw, and again, just no spoilers, but one of the cool things that happens in the book is one character sees someone else use a really, really complicated, nuanced command, and the clothing does it, and this character is just like, how did you make that happen?
Yeah.
And the other character is like, that's way too complicated for you.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know how to do this. I'm not going to show you how to do this. It's way beyond what you're able to do right now.
So the other kingdom, Halindrin. They view breath as sort of a commodity. Power. So they have basically an army of quote-unquote undead, where they take dead bodies, or bodies that have been deceased, and put breath in them, and they're basically mindless soldiers.
Yeah.
So the gods, basically, the people that you're talking about. The Returned, who died and awakened as these giant Returned people, they get a godly breath. So they have one godly breath, but they need breaths of other people to sustain their life.
Yeah, the way it works, the way that it's described later in the book, is that there's a different quality of breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Returned have one big breath that's like worth 5,000 smaller ones, but the body feeds on your breath as you're living. And so
for the Returned, this is only for the Returned.
For the Returned. Yeah. So the Returned, when they consume that one breath, they can just fade away. But if they keep consuming breath, then it, the lesser quality gets used up first.
Yeah.
So there's just like a weekly parade of people who are giving their breath to Return.
But they receive monetary compensation.
Yeah, they're rewarded for it. It's not like they're just being forced to give up life.
Yeah. And so these gods are, or the Return, they're also considered gods. Their main goal is to find a worthy person to give their godly breath to, their one big breath, because it can heal all diseases. It can create, like, limbs that have been destroyed.
Yeah.
Or it
Cure life-threatening illnesses. Yeah,
things along those lines. So people come up to these gods and sort of, like...
Petition them, basically.
Yeah, say, please, you know, my dying infant needs this breath to live.
Yeah, which one of the characters that I really like, Life Song, or Light Song...
Light Song,
is a returned, and it actually follows him in a section with the petitions, and he noted, because he's only been returned 5 years, he doesn't have memories of his previous life, but... He has to listen to these petitions at least, I think, once a week, and for, like, all day. And this woman comes up with a child, and immediately he's just like, oh, Jesus, do not, this is going to be terrible. Yeah. And sure enough, it's terrible. Like, the woman's story is basically begging him to save her child, and he has to say no.
Yeah. Which is very interesting that these people have to sit there and be like, no. And, these gods have these, priests around them that basically fulfill certain needs, like, you know, pamper them and things along those lines.
Yeah, Light Song's title is The Bold. And so these are people who are gods of ideas.
Yes,
and so this is why people are petitioning specific ones.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting because in the book he's also trying to figure out his past because, like you said... When you become a returned, you don't remember anything of your previous life. So he's trying to figure out, like, why am I the bold? I don't feel bold. What did I do in my previous life that was so bold that I came back as a return to, like, have this mantle?
I mean, and part of why I like Light Song is that... Honestly, I find him hilarious.
He is, because he's very sarcastic.
I may have a touch, I've never been diagnosed with it, but I may have a touch of oppositional defiant disorder. And Light Song spends most of the book, he can't actually get drunk, but he drinks these increasingly high amounts of alcohol and tells people, oh, I'm sorry I said that, I don't remember it, I must have been drunk. And they're like, you can't get drunk. And he's like, well, I can...
Because, again, he has so much breath in him that he's not affected by disease, so he's not affected by alcohol, which is, quote-unquote, I guess, a disease there.
Yeah, or a toxin.
A toxin,
And so he spends a lot of the book acting counter to what you would expect a god. Like, everyone else is acting very regally and very whatever, and he's just, like, there's a scene where he's interacting with other returned playing games, and it's basically like, it sounds like shot put or like a blending of like croquet and golf maybe with these
three guys.
Bocce ball, something like that. But these other gods keep inviting him to try and beat him. He doesn't know the rules to the game, but he acts like he does. Like, he'll do things like just not look at where he's supposed to be throwing a ball and toss it over his shoulder, and they're like, that was a perfect shot. Yeah. He's just like, I know. But he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, he's just kind of blundering through. He's very ungodlike.
And I really enjoy this world building, too, because so all the gods have a particular amount of army.
Yeah.
And the way that it's governed is all the gods sort of have a vote, depending on how big their army is.
Now, the safeguard in that, kind of like... what the U.S. does with... It's not like a button that we can hit to start nuclear war. There are safe codes and people have to turn keys and stuff like that. The lifeless have to be command... Because they don't have a mind of their own, they have to respond to command phrases.
Yeah.
And so Light Song is one of only four of the returned who actually have the command phrases for this army. So he is in a very... high hierarchy in the power structure, because he's only one of, like, I think there's 25 or 26 returned.
Yeah.
And he's only one of four who has the command phrases. And yeah, that's a major plot point.
Yeah, because there's a lot of political back and forth where...
not as deep as like something like Game of Thrones, but like it's made to look like that. Like there's constant scheming behind...
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's... I'm glad that it's not as complex as Game of Thrones, because again, it's a single book. It doesn't have the time to build all of these elaborate schemes.
Yeah, he doesn't it's have only the luxury of 8,000 pages. Yeah, to, it's only even about, though I like it, Warbreaker is only 500 some odd pages.
Yes, yeah. Like, so it does kind of get to the point, which I kind of like. And this is why I recommend this book, because it's a standalone book. You don't have to invest so much time into this book. And I think that it's a good read, spoiler on my opinion. Anyway, so getting back to these characters. So, you've got the two sisters who are princesses.
Yeah.
Vivenna,
the older one,
yeah,
has been
raised to basically become the God King's wife.
Right, so she has been educated in Halandrin culture, the politics, the way
etiquette.
How to interact as a queen.
Mm-hmm.
And Ciri is the, I think, like, third daughter. So she's
the youngest
daughter. She's the youngest.
Yeah.
Because there's another one that's in the monastery.
Yeah, and she's the middleborn.
Yeah, and so Ciri's the youngest, so she hasn't really been cultivated to be this. She's kind
of
wild.
And she's more of the free spirit, kick off my shoes, run out in the field sort of deal.
And her father actually goes back on the deal and...
Yeah, he doesn't go back. He finds a loophole.
Yeah,
where it says
just a daughter.
A daughter, yeah.
Not the first daughter.
Not the first daughter. So he does have favoritism. He prefers his eldest daughter over his youngest daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, in the book, it specifically points out that, there was favoritism there.
I would push back against that a little, because
really?
Vivenna, well, Ciri actually comes to the realization that by doing this, he's, like, there would be a provocation, but there's going to be a provocation from Halandrin regardless, because of the stretched diplomacy between the two, or the worn-thin diplomacy. And so she comments on a section that this may be the safest place for her.
Maybe.
Because if a war breaks out, Halandrin's going to go to Idris, and Idris is in the backwoods versus the big city.
But in when they go to the spy's house, the one who's been... basically, there's a spy that Idris puts in there. There's letters between him and the king, and those letters do point out some favoritism towards the eldest.
But Ciri does not know that.
Ciri does not know that.
Yeah.
But,
Vivenna does.
So
because
got...
Vivenna goes to Halandrin to rescue Ciri.
Ciri, yeah. Because they don't really know much about the God King, other than he basically is like a tyrant, and that he's like this giant king over this
over the
land.
Returned.
Yeah.
The returned are over the city.
Yeah, and he has a bunch of breath. Like, no one knows how many breaths this person has, because the way that it gets passed down is the God King has a child with the queen, or the princess, and usually the kid is stillborn.
Mm-hmm.
And then the God King passes off his breath
to the
stillborn, who, again, as we said, they have that godly breath, which revives that stillborn kid, and the stillborn kid becomes the new God King.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the book, you find out that when the king actually does that, he passes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is an interesting point in the book. Anyway... So you've got those two characters. You've got the return Lightbringer.
Lightsong.
And then, so we've got those three. Then we've got the other character.
Vasher. He's a really interesting character.
Yes.
I will say reversals are a very big theme in this book. Redemption, reversal, mm-hmm. things not being what they appear to be.
Yes.
That's a little bit... That's as far as I think we want to go with Vasher.
Yep.
That's Vasher. So that's four. Who was the fifth one you were thinking about?
I was thinking of the God King. I mean, you end up getting his...
I lump him in with Ciri.
Ciri. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because you kind of get a little bit of background with him. You get this, at the beginning, idea that he's like this tyrant, this king that rules with an iron fist. But then you kind of get a little bit more of his story where he's just a figurehead. He doesn't even know how to read or write because all they do is pamper him and, like, lock him into this particular kingdom.
Which I have to say, when they first take her in for the wedding and stuff, that was my first indication of, like, oh, he's not, like...
Yeah.
He's not what I was expecting. He's probably just a figurehead.
Because when Ciri gets to the capital... They basically wash her. They put her in this great gown. And they're like, all right, well, you've been here for one day. We're going to put you in his chambers. And we expect you to have him make a baby. Yeah. So she basically goes into the chambers, takes off her dress, and, you know, bows to the king. And he just sits in his bed. And he just, like, looks at her. And he's like, oh, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, she's been instructed by his priest to, like, not talk to him.
Yeah.
Not look at him.
Yeah.
Which... She even comments, she's like, that's going to make it kind of difficult
to have a baby. Sex, yeah.
So one of the cool things I think about her being in the God King's domain, I guess, or like, it's not a castle, but like his court, I guess. All of the other returns lead these like extravagantly wealthy lives. Like they have whatever they want. They have priests to attend them. All Light Song has to do is put his hand out and he has a glass of wine in it.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Like, and he'll just throw the glass when he's done with it on the floor, put his hand out, and there's another one in it. Like, he doesn't even have to refill a glass.
Yeah.
The cool thing about Ciri, though, is when she's wandering around the court during the day, one of the attendants named Bluefingers, because he's a scribe and so his fingers are blue.
I think is a
funny
nickname.
Because it's not his name, but that's just what she calls him.
Yep.
Or what he tells her to call him.
Yeah.
The cool thing about Ciri being in this fabulous state of decadence is she's talking with Bluefingers and he's like, well, when you get tired, you can just tell a servant and they'll assemble a sleeping room. Like, there's just some storehouse in this court of just tables and chairs and books and music and people on retainer to come entertain her. And they
just like waiting, waiting for the second.
They just wait for the indication that she's tired and they'll bring out a couch and some walls and then a canopy over top and you don't want to,
But again, she's stuck in this castle. Like, she wants to go out. Yeah. And she wants to like visit the grasslands and things like that. And again, Bluefingers is basically telling her, nope, you're stuck here.
Yep.
And he's like, go and make that baby. Chop, chop. So so a couple of nights go on with this, her taking off her dress, presenting herself to the God King, where the God King's just basically looking at her. And then you kind of realize, again, this isn't too much of a spoiler, that, like, he doesn't know what to do because he's just been pampered his entire existence.
He has no idea what he's expected to do.
Yeah. And you also realize that they have cut out his tongue, which is interesting because he can't talk, which means that he can't use his breath because he can't give the command words. He can't, you know, say the phrase to transfer breath. He can't, you know, say
which
the command...
Which is a plot hole, because if they're giving away, like, how does he...
How does he give breath to the stillborn?
How would one normally give breath, if that's the case?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't actually think about that, but yeah, that is kind of a bit of a plot hole. Yeah. Like, how do you transfer your breath to the,
unless they rely on things to happen all the time.
Yeah. Nah. Yeah, that is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Yes. I think that the magic system is really cool. Again, it's interesting because you have these returns, and then you have people giving their breath to inanimate objects to make them alive for a little bit and do the command word. Again, that's how they have their army of undead, because they're not like the returned. These are just undead soldiers who died, and somebody randomly gave them, somebody came up to them, gave them a breath, said a command word like, protect me, and a particular word, and then the undead will protect them. If they want to change their, I guess, their status, or if they wanted to do something else, they would have to give them a command word and say, lift that box, and then they lift the box.
Yeah.
So the way that it works is you give the command word, and then you tell the object to do something, and the object will do that indefinitely. So if you, like, tell a undead soldier to start clapping, he will clap until his arms fall off, basically. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think this is a spoiler, so Vasher has a sword.
I wanted to talk about the sword. So the sword is really cool.
Yes.
So the sword is named Nightblood.
Fantastic name for a sword.
The sword is an intelligent weapon. So any of you out there who play D&D, if you played 2nd edition, I don't think 5th has any rules for it. But 2nd edition, I know, had rules for intelligent weapons, where they can communicate with you psychically.
Yeah. So the sword's been given breath over a millennium.
Creation of it is, it is an awakened object that has sentience.
Yeah, because it has so many breaths in it.
Now, to and one of the cool things in it is that Vasher has, uses the sword during the book fairly frequently, but he never he only draws it a couple times, because when you draw it, you have to power it with your breath to make it do these ridiculous things.
Yeah.
He has this cool trick where Nightblood has an aura that if you have, Never mind.
Yeah.
So, Vasher will actually use it more as like a tool or a club.
Yeah.
Rather than drawing it.
But when he does draw it,
it is murderous, because its command was to destroy evil.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing about Nightblood, what's
evil?
The thing that I love about Nightblood is that he's constantly in whoever's head, whoever has him in their possession, is constantly saying things like, yeah, I think that thing's evil. Let's destroy it. Because he has no moral framework, because he's an awakened piece of metal.
He's an object. He doesn't know what's good or evil.
Yeah. He's telling one character about a thing that happened, and he goes, oh yeah, that happened yesterday, blah, blah, blah. And the character's like, that happened like 400 years ago.
Yeah.
And the character who happens to have Nightblood at the time goes, he has no reference for time. He has no idea how time works. He's an awakened piece of metal.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what evil is. So really his command phrase is just
destroy. Yeah.
He's a very cool character. I guess that can be the 5th character.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, he is a snarky blade, and really,
because of his aura, sometimes he'll be stolen and a character will come across him and he'll just be like in his sheath again, but whoever was carrying him was dead, because the assumption is they drew the sword and it either drained their breath or he just forced them to kill themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really funny.
Yeah. It's very,
you have to have a fairly strong will to,
command
to not be taken in and fooled by his aura.
Yeah. So,
I say his because they refer to the sword as he.
Him. Yeah.
I'm assuming that the voice in the head is like more masculine. I'm guessing.
That's what I assume. Yeah. So
that's the book.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about...
without any spoilers.
The princess, the older princess.
Oh, yeah. So Vivenna, she's in the city with a friend of hers who... He's kind of like a ranger, right?
Kind of. He's like a bit of a spy ranger. And she meets up with these mercenaries, like a group of mercenaries.
Yeah, who've been contracted by Lemix, who is her... He's basically a spy master working on behalf of Idris.
Yeah, who is sick and ends up passing all of his breaths that he's accumulated. Because it's fair, like, common practice
in Halandrin
to pay people for breath. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you, I don't know, 50 gold so you can give me your one breath.
Which, I like the detail that, because she's horrified when she finds out that he has all this breath.
Yeah, because he was a devout person of religion.
Yeah, he was in Idris, but, like, he's a spy. To blend into Halandrin, he's taken on this breath.
Yeah.
So I like that.
And you gain power from that breath. Like,
yeah,
you
he gains power from the breath, and, yeah, I just like that reversal where she's like, oh, he's a spy. So, of course, one of the mercenaries, I think Denth is the one that breaks it down for her.
Yeah.
He has to blend in. Like, you can't be wearing your pretty dresses because they're a liability. You need to wear pants. Like,
yeah. Though the only thing that does, I guess, point her out is all of the princesses' hairs change color.
Yeah.
So their hair changes,
it's tied,
like,
to an emotional state, unless you can, like, will it.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, the spy master ends up passing his breath to her, and she is, like, horrified because she gets this, like, new sensation of colors. It's like a rush of just, like, different things because your senses have become heightened.
Yeah, imagine existing on one level of reality and then someone just, like, flicks a switch in your head and you're existing in 15 to 20% more reality.
Yeah, and it's super intensified, and you're like, what are all these colors? Like, I didn't know that this particular color existed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then she wants to, like, pass off the breath to other people, but the mercenaries basically convince her, like, hey, no, it's a status to have so much breath.
Yeah.
So you can get into these, like, fancier parties. She's able to get into the, basically the ceremony.
The wedding ceremony.
Yeah. Because she has this, like, status.
Yeah. Because they even point out she has to keep these now. Because once they've mingled together, like, she can't do it without becoming what they call a drap. Which means she has no breath anymore. Which for her means she has no soul anymore.
Yeah. So she's kind of stuck with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically not getting into a lot of spoilers so far. That is the synopsis of the book. Again, I recommend this book. I think it's a really good standalone book.
Yeah.
It's a book that you can pick up. It's about 500 pages. It's not, again, super complicated like Wheel of Time or Game of Thrones. You can read it. You can probably... How long did it take you to read? Maybe...
Me?
Yeah.
I read it in maybe 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. So it's a quick read. You can put it down. And I really enjoyed it. You know, it does go deep into, like, political battles.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, interesting ways of using breaths to awaken certain objects. You also get, like, not a spider sense, but basically you can sense other people's auras. There's unique ways that people use the breath.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the cast of, like, godlike characters.
Yeah. Now, taking off your biases,
yes.
What are some things you did not like about this book?
So, I do wish that there was a little bit more character development. It does seem like it's trying to go from plot A to plot B to plot C quickly.
Yeah. It's written much more like a treatment for, like, a movie than it is a book.
Yeah.
Like, that was my main criticism of it, is that there's not a whole lot of character development.
Yes, and I will say that that's probably the most lacking. I'm not saying that it's not devoid of character.
Oh, no, no, because, like, reversals are a theme in the book.
Yeah.
Like, but it could be stronger character-wise.
There could be. I wish they would have maybe spent a little bit more time with the mercenary group, because they seemed like a fun bunch of, like, kindred souls.
See, I didn't really like... there's one bit that I like with the mercenaries.
Because...
That's a spoiler, but...
Yeah,
but,
we'll get into that.
But I really did not like how Denth was all like, nobody trusts mercenary. Like, it's like, dude, I get, like, don't be a mercenary if you don't like the stereotypes that people think about mercenaries.
Yeah, and then they also dip their toe in a little bit between, like, a romance of Denth and the, princess.
Yeah, Denth and Vivenna.
Yeah. And, you know, it seemed like it was lightly touched upon, but I felt like they had other things to talk about, or other stories to basically talk about, so they didn't really focus much on that.
Yeah. Now, for what it's worth, for me, like you said...
Yeah, so what was your favorite part of it?
So, yeah, with my criticism biases on, I don't think the characters have nearly enough development as they could have.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the dialogue is very weak in this. Like, it feels too exposition.
Yeah.
But
again, they're trying to build a... and I really love the setting, and I feel like the exposition really sets up the setting. I do feel that it could have been done another way, but I do kind of
There's too much telling, which I get. It's a standalone, fairly short fantasy novel.
Yeah. So you kind of have to cut to the chase on some things.
Yeah, you don't have 8,000 pages to spread out. Now, taking off my biases glasses, it was very fun. I would like to see more written in this world. I would probably read more of his stuff if he would set it in this world and flesh it out more.
Yeah.
I think
he's
said in, like, interviews and Q&As that he's not.
Not, yeah.
But I do like the world. I kind of want to play a role-playing game in this world.
Yeah. I kind of thought about that, too.
I would love to see this, because it is so exposition heavy in dialogue. I think it would be a very good adapted media property.
Yeah.
So I look forward to our casting session on this.
Well, I will say, so they have, I guess, talks have gone through where somebody has bought the rights for the Mistborn series to change that into either a movie or like a mini series or something like that.
A mini series.
I would think so too. So if that goes well,
maybe, but they're adapting, King Killer Chronicle for like a video game and a role-playing game and a comic series and a television show where Lin-Manuel Miranda is doing stuff. So like just listen to the first and second book club episodes for my feelings on that. if that's being adapted, I feel like this is a strong candidate for being adapted into other properties.
But I will say, again, with the hard sort of magic system, this could be a D&D, like, module.
Oh, yeah, it's very easy to adapt this.
Yeah, because, again, it has set rules. Like, you can do X, Y, and C with the breath. Though, you pointed out a loophole, which, I don't know, or a plot hole, that I don't know what would happen. Like, the God King would have to pass his breath to the stillborn child, but he couldn't do that if he didn't have a tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all right, so,
I mean, for it to be a role-playing game adaptation, I would think that they would need to have the level of market penetration of, like, a show or a movie.
Yeah.
Before you could do, which is dumb, but because, like, a role-playing game isn't going to sell nearly as much.
Yeah,
but exactly. It's the only way to get the numbers up to make it worthwhile, so.
Because a lot of people probably haven't heard of this book, because it was a book in between his Mistborn series and a couple of other, or when he started writing for The Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that this game, like, because you said he's big into magic, with all of the spell stuff and item stuff in here, do you think that it would be a better candidate for, like, a game, like a CCG than a role-playing game?
No, I don't think so. Where you
role-play out factions? Like, maybe, I'm thinking he could build out a world like Magic has done via card art and stuff.
No, I think just with the setting and everything, it would lend itself better to a role-playing game than an actual card game. Did you know that... Maybe a legacy card game? I don't know.
Yeah.
Did you know that Magic had or has just put out a role-playing game?
Yeah, it's Sourcebooks for
For D&D, yeah. Where it's like set in one of their worlds and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's the Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I mean, it's not surprising. I feel like Hasbro doesn't see enough return on D&D that I think this makes sense for them to try and fork two audiences together.
Yeah. But
I haven't looked at the book. I listened to the Dragon Talk podcast, which it's the official Dungeons & Dragons thing. And so they talk to a lot of the artists and the lore masters and stuff for it. And it sounds interesting, but not having played Magic in Ravnica, like, I don't know if I'm really drawn to it. I know that there was a guy who was doing it as, like, a Moonlight project maybe a year ago, where he was he was on the Magic team, but he kind of would take work home and put out, like, a 40-page supplement of, this is what it's like in this world, are these races, and putting it out for free, so I hope he gets some, like, financial
one. Yeah. But, no, but I would see Warbreaker more as a role-playing game than an actual card game.
That's fair.
Okay, so we are going to get to...
Real quick.
Oh, sorry.
What's the letter grade for this book for you?
It would probably be a B+.
B+?
B+ for me. Yes.
Okay.
I think it's... I could even be talked into an A-.
Which one?
B+. We'll do B+. I do really like this book. This book was a fun ride for me. I enjoyed the magic system. I enjoyed the world that Brandon Sanderson had built. And, what would you say your grade would be?
So, I think this is the highest one that I've given to a book. So far, I would give it a solid B.
Okay.
So, and I think that's high praise because I don't like Brandon Sanderson stuff. When you chose it, I was just like...
Yeah. Good. I'm glad that you were pleasantly surprised on it.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. Again, here's a question. I would like to see a role-playing game or another media property out of this. I think it'd be ripe for it.
So my question is, has this sparked you to read other books that he's written?
I could probably be talked into... So Mistborn is just a trilogy. It's Stormlight that's like 12 books or something.
It's got a plan for 12 books. It's not 12 books yet.
Okay.
The plan is...
talked into reading the Mistborn trilogy, probably, but I would have to either be lent it or get it from a library.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I want to, like, buy them.
You could actually read his first book called Elysium, I believe.
Oh.
It's a standalone, too. It's his first book that he wrote.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So maybe I like him in short bursts rather than, like, sustained
space. Maybe. But it is probably the roughest of the books because it's his first book that he published, and he still didn't have his writing style down.
Yeah.
But again, I will say, with all of his books, since I've read them, I know that there's going to be a twist somewhere.
Yeah.
So you're always kind of like looking out for that twist of like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
And on that note, let's wrap up this episode, then we'll do a spoiler wall. So
yeah. So again, I highly recommend this book.
Oh yeah.
I say go out there. It's in paperback now. It's like $9 at a Barnes & Noble, or it's probably in a bunch of thrift stores.
Yeah, you could probably find it in McKay's or like a Book Nook or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. So I would recommend this if you love, like, fantasy, if you love hard magic systems, which are, again, you know, have rules, follow those rules, have particular numbers, I think you would love this book.
Yeah. In the meta moment, since we're officially ending this and then doing a spoiler wall, come see us at 221 BCon. We'll be there doing convention coverage, so we'll...
Yeah, this is our second time going there.
Yeah, they're fantastic. It's a good group of people running it and attending it and running panels there. I have nothing but good things to say about that
yeah, convention. Same here. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad that they have welcomed us back.
Yeah, and... it's the first weekend in April, so it's the 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be there all 3 days. Come hang out.
Drop by and say hey to us.
The next book club book that we're working on will be Stephen King's 1977 work, The Shining.
Ooh.
And we're actually also... That was one of my choices for media, for the main show, to watch the movie.
Yeah.
So I think we should put those out back to back.
Yeah, I think we should do that too.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a lot of fun just to sort of talk about the difference between the two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a lot of difference. But there we'll get into that in the main show and probably in the book club, I'm assuming.
So spoilers.
Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler.
Spoilers.
Okay, we're back.
Oh, boy. All right, so... Okay,
so we're doing a casting session.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, and the reason I think this should be past the spoiler wall is...
Because there's characters that change their persona, basically.
Yeah. Like I said during the main bit, reversals are a major theme in this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of... like Brandon Sanderson does, he does a lot of turns, and there's a lot of twists. Where, you know, Vash comes across as a villain. You think that he's trying to create this tension between the two nations to start a war when actually he's trying to prevent
it. Yeah, and that isn't revealed until about three quarters of the way through.
Like,
you have a suspicion, but it's not revealed entirely until almost the end.
Yeah, because he's like that bad guy who's doing good things.
Yeah. And plus, you're introduced to a group of characters who treat him as if he's a villain, because on the surface, they look like they're nice and they're helping this princess.
Yeah.
And,
do you want to say...
They're the bad guys.
Yeah, the mercenaries end up being the bad guys. There's a fantastic line from the mercenaries. I think you alluded to it in the non-spoiler.
Oh, well... Well, no, so he actually does have a running bit where he's like, no one trusts mercenaries.
Yeah.
The other end of that line, though, is when he finally betrays them, is no one trusts mercenaries for a good reason. Because we're not loyal. We're loyal to the coin.
Yeah, and the first, like, interaction with the mercenaries, they're like, oh, we're going to kill you. we're just joking. We're not going to kill you. Yeah. And then it's like, no, we're really going to kill you.
So,
and the thing is, like, so they were paid to kidnap the princess, the oldest one.
Yeah.
And their thing was like, hey, you know what the best way to kidnap somebody is? To convince them that they're not kidnapped, but just to hang around them.
Yeah. So the way I approached this casting thing is I was looking through the book and... Typically, the way a script works is it's about a page a minute.
Yeah.
And so, looking at it, there's no storyline I would cut.
Okay.
With that in mind, I'm like, okay, I'm going to treat this like a 6-episode Netflix type thing.
I think it would be a good, like, miniseries. I don't think it would be
full season. If you made it a movie, I would think that the only thing you would focus on would be... Like, the only thing that they could focus on and make it a 2-hour movie would probably be Light Song's thing.
Yeah.
With some other, like, mentions of the other A and B plots.
Yeah.
But Light Song's plot is not really an A or B plot.
No,
like,
it's not.
It's very minor.
It is.
Which is why it's adaptable easily, I think, to, like, a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I highly agree. I think it would be, like, a good... 6-episode miniseries.
Yeah, not a full season, just like boom, boom, boom. You could separate it up every like 10 chapters,
yeah.
I think.
I think it would be a good like an hour or 45 minutes, whatever they do, sort of deal.
Yeah. So for Vivenna, I have Adelaide Kane.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because she's in a show called Rain. where she plays a princess. And I feel like I haven't watched a whole lot of that show, but I feel like she's a good selection for playing a character like that. That's who I imagined after reading the description of Ivana.
Okay.
I feel like the special effects in this show would have to be top notch with all the color stuff. Like, there's going to be a lot of green screen shit.
There would have to be a really good cinematographer who worked on this. Because, the colors would have to be spot on.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, the costuming would also have to be really spot on, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just with some of the descriptions of, especially when you're in the major city, of these, grand ballroom gowns and these, suits and stuff like that.
Well, and one of the things I think that would make this easily adaptable is that, a lot of, fantasy movies, they just look dumb because of costuming.
Yeah.
I feel like the costuming in this is realistic enough that you don't have some dude wandering around with eight swords and a jacket made out of zippers.
You stay away from my anime.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think it's easily realistic for them to make these characters. Did you have anyone
Let me just preference, I'm horrible at names.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, the actress from, Game of Thrones, Dragon Lady,
Emma Clarke?
Yeah, Emma Clarke. I think she would
be. Amelia Clarke.
Okay. I think she would be, and maybe it's just the wig that throws me off, her blonde, wig.
Yeah.
But, she's got that, tall, regal sort of proper vibe to her.
Sure.
That I think would play well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then for Ciri, since she's younger, I'm going to put forth Thaisa Farmiga.
Who?
She is, she's an actress. She was in the first and third seasons of American Horror Story.
Okay.
I think she plays younger well. She's 19 or 20, but she looks younger.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
So I feel like she could play that. I would imagine Ciri is 16 or so in this book.
Yeah.
Because she's the youngest child.
Mm hmm. Okay. Okay. So, I would pick a non, drugged Lindsay Lohan as
Ciri?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because she has that kind of, free spirit vibe to her.
Okay. That's not who I would expect, because really? I think she's older than Amelia Clarke, so...
I'm not saying, right now.
Oh, you mean, gotcha, so, previous Time Machine.
Time Machine,
gotcha,
yeah.
Okay.
Is that
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, this is make-believe anyway, yeah.
So... So, sort of, when she was doing, Mean Girls?
Okay, yeah, when she was, 19.
Yeah, where she had that sort of, free spirit vibe to her.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, you would have to change her hair and everything like that, but
yeah.
I think she would do a good job.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that makes sense, that age range. When you said Lindsay Lohan, I was like, drugged out, smoky voiced Ciri as a 16-year-old? That's weird. Okay.
No, but I'm thinking we're doing Time Machines because I'm pulling, I might go with, some 60 actors or, from the 60s or something like that. Yeah, okay.
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 So, I have for Denth, the mercenary that tricks her, I have Benicio Del Toro.
Oh.
He's very good at playing both very charismatic and likable and also just an evil, malicious shithead.
Yeah.
I feel like he would be a good... And Denth is very, very quick with a sword. Benicio Del Toro looks like he has, that lithe, wiry muscle.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like he could pull off, a sword fighter.
Yeah. He wasn't the, my name is, he wasn't from...
He's in Last Jedi, he's the hacker.
Oh, okay.
He's the collector and, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. So I was thinking, again, I'm horrible with names. Princess Bride, Wesley.
Oh, Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
I think that's how you pronounce his name.
I think that he would, because okay. he has that sort of, like,
sword slick fighter vibe. Yeah.
But, like, he also, yeah, he comes across, like, with his mustache and his, like, slick back hair slick and back everything. Hair,
yeah.
I could definitely see him as a mercenary.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, for Tung Fa, he's a, he's one of the mercenaries. He's the big, muscly dude.
Yeah, he's like your brawn, sort of, not smart kind of guy.
He also has all of these animals with him that replace. And it turns out he's been torturing and vivisecting and just keeping these animals as trophies. He is a very disturbing
character.
Yeah,
yeah.
But because he's kind of likable before you find all that shit out, I have Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Really?
Because I don't think he's ever played a villain, and so I think if
he has.
Has he?
Yeah, he was the Scorpion King.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was a CG person, though. In the Scorpion King movie, I think he's the good guy.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, he's likable enough that, like, I feel like people, if they were watching this, would be like, oh, The Rock's in it. He's a good guy, right? Oh, no, he tortures small animals. Oh, no, he's a murderer.
So, my character, again, bad at names. The big guy who played the Tick in the live action, the old live action, he...
Patrick Warburton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he would be a good...
Well, you know what's funny with that mention? He is the bodyguard in Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not a stretch to see him as a character like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that character, other than the murdering small animals thing, that character is a good analog.
Yeah, and he also played Putty from
Seinfeld.
So he's got that kind of like... dumbish vibe, but like it'd be weird to sort of see him as like a murderer. Like
So for Vasher.
Oh, you didn't go with Jules?
Jules
was another part of the
She wasn't in it very much.
But she does have an important role because she has one of those undeads.
Yeah, who, one of the lifeless named Clyde.
Yeah. And there's a point in the story where the princess, Vivenna learns her secret code, and she actually uses that to escape out of the bad situation.
Yup.
Yeah, so that's why people don't, that's why you can't give out your code for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for her, I had Lady Gaga, because...
Hang on, for Jewel?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you didn't have Jewel. Or did it was just
in a different...
Oh, okay.
It was just in a different order. Yeah, with Jules, I had her as Lady Gaga.
Huh.
She does a very good job of playing weirdos.
Yeah.
I think, because, like, just in her American Horror Story work...
Yeah.
The way I imagine Jules is, like, this crusty, like... drab person, right?
Really?
Like, and I feel like that would be enough of a stretch that she could do it. I think she's up for an Oscar award this year with The Star Is Born,
Oh, nice.
So she's a good actor.
Yeah, yeah. But you got her as more crusty Jewel? I got her kind of as a, like, a weirdo.
Yeah.
Like, but more of, like, an
like a
hermit-looking,
like, homeless person vibe.
Huh. Because my pick was, the actor who does Kimmy Smith.
Ellie Kemper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Sort of like as a... And she would have to not be like the bubbly weirdo, but more of like...
Yeah, she'd have to be like
an actual weirdo weirdo.
Yeah.
And I would be interested to see if she could pull that off.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for Claude, the lifeless...
Yeah.
I have John Cena.
I didn't even think about that. Ooh, who would I have?
Because he's a big dude, and I feel like it's enough of a... Like, because Claude doesn't have any lines.
Yeah.
He just punches shit.
Punches and fights.
Which is wrestling. So I was like, okay, well, he's a big wrestler who's likable. Because he is kind of a good guy. I mean, he's neutral.
Yeah.
But he's kind of a good guy.
I actually had no, but I didn't think we were doing that. Yeah.
Gotcha. So for Vasher,
yeah.
I was torn between two, depending on how you wanted to portray him.
Portray him, yeah.
So, one of them is Idris Elba.
Oh.
Because Idris Elba plays, like, in my head, I have Vasher as this kind of scraggly, like, he's the, like, private detective in a noir. Like, he has had this shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
And Idris Elba plays that very well on Luther, and he also plays it very well as Roland in The Dark Tower, which no one saw, but I really like.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. But, so I had him, or if you wanted to play him as someone who looks imposing and maybe villainous,
yeah,
but who is actually a really good dude, I also had Terry Crews.
Oh! Oh, that
because
would be...
Vasher's also supposed to be ripped and gigantic. Not saying Idris Elba isn't, but, like, Terry Crews
is... he supposed to be ripped and gigantic?
I guess, like, I was imagining, like, muscular because of all of his time on the street and, like, having to ground a lot. Like, he's in shape, for sure.
I've got two as well.
Okay.
So
depending on portrayal.
Yeah. So the sort of creepy, noir, like, living life, I got Nicolas Cage. And it could just be my love of Nicolas Cage.
I do know you love Nicolas Cage.
But I could pull it off.
Like, he was the sorcerer in The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's
so he kind of has that, like, weird sort of, like, kind of, like, feeling. It could pull off that, like, being a villain, but not being a villain, like, having those ulterior motives.
Yeah.
And just kind of being weird.
Okay.
I think he would be a good Vasher. And then, I think, I forget his name, but he was the doctor,
the 10th one?
Yeah.
David Tennant.
David Tennant, yeah. I think that he would be a good Vasher, don't you think?
Yeah, like, I could see him pulling off Malicious with, like, Purple Man.
Yeah,
and
I thought he did fantastic with, that...
Tortured and, like, Bad Samaritan. Or not Bad Samaritan. He's a bad guy in that, I think.
Yeah, I think he could pull off that, like, evil vibe.
What is the name? He plays a detective hunting for a child killer in some show that was adapted from BBC to America. Hmm. But, yeah, he can play, like, wounded and tortured very well.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to see that heel twist of him being an actual good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Light Song, I have Ashton Kutcher.
Interesting. Yeah. I can see Ashton Kutcher.
Because he's normally known for, like, his weirdo persona, but, like, I think he can play a dramatic actor very well. Like, he's in a Steve Jobs biopic. I think it's the one that's called Just Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But, or Jobs is the name of the movie. But he does a very good job playing a dramatic role in that movie. And so I feel like Light Song doesn't require a whole lot of drama necessarily because he is kind of being goofy. But you still want an actor who's, like,
versatile.
Who's versatile and looks good because the gods are supposed to be.
Yeah.
Super attractive, and I know he got his start as a like an underwear
model.
So
yeah.
Like, he looks good and can act. So
yeah,
that's really where I landed on with that one.
Okay, I would go with Star-Lord.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah, Chris Pratt.
I was going to suggest him.
Yeah.
As well, like I was
because
just like,
he
okay.
can play a serious role, like with he did when he. Played actual Star-Lord in Infinity Wars. I think that he has, like, the emotional range. And I just really love his facial expressions, and I think that he would give a good performance on that, like, clever, witty, funny sort of side of,
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's see, who's next? So, Susebron, the God King.
God King, yeah.
I have Evan Peters. He is Quicksilver in the Days of Future Past movie.
Okay.
He's in American Horror Story, like, every season.
Yeah, because the God King is supposed to be a younger
Yeah, he's supposed to be younger.
Like, in his 20s?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, again, you know, once you have so many breaths, you stop aging.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't have anyone in mind, but I can definitely think of somebody.
If you don't have anyone, it's fine.
Yeah. I did mainly just the main characters. And
okay.
Yeah.
So, Blue Fingers, I have Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg would be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Because, again, yeah, you sort of get that churn.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, you're actually a dick. Oh,
you're actually an asshole. Okay, I see how this is going.
Yeah.
And then I have for Blushweaver, the other returned.
Yeah, who's kind of the, I guess, the counter to
Lightsong,
yeah.
I have Alison Brie.
Ooh, yeah. I think that would be a good pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have anyone? Or
No, yeah. I had nobody for this.
Like, and the reason I had her is because she's supposed to be attractive, because she's a returned, but yeah. She's also kind of sneaky and underhanded, and I think she can play that character.
Yeah, because she is more focused on the whole, like, politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What was her mantle? Do you remember? I'm drawing a blank.
Is it like Blushweaver the Beautiful or is something it like that? Because I got the feeling she was like the Aphrodite Venus type god that they have.
I will say out of all of like the...
rather than like Light Song's Apollo.
Yeah. Out of all of the like churns, I do like that Light Song's like main priest guy was part of his past. Yeah. I do think that was like a really interesting churn.
Well, I also like how Light Song is trying to figure out what his past is.
Yeah.
And he's like, maybe I was a detective, maybe I was this, maybe I was that. And his priest Larimar is like, you weren't any of this.
Yeah.
You were a fucking scribe. Like,
yeah.
You were not a hero.
Yeah.
Like, you saved... I think he saved his daughter.
Yes.
Like, Larimar is his actual brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he saved his niece, and that's why he was the Bold. Is, like, that one act is, like, bold enough. Like, Lightsong is thinking of these big dramatic gestures.
Where it's just, like, one simple act.
Yeah,
can...
it's one simple thing that he did.
And I really like that, like, that churn that, that...
Reversal?
Yeah. Or, yeah, that reveal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the word I was looking for. That reveal, because it does symbolize, like, you don't need to be this great thing to be bold. Like, everyday acts of boldness can elevate you to this, like, god-like status.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
Well, for Larimar, I have Nick Frost.
Oh.
Because they comment on him being overweight.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's normally playing an overweight, like, comic relief character. And, like, your introduction to Larimar is that Lightsong decides he's not going to call him his name anymore. He's going to start calling him Scoop.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he could play, like, a downtrodden imbecile type character very easily.
I also really enjoyed in the book where these gods, when they woke up, they would have to recount their dreams because their dreams were...
Oh, like prophecies.
Prophecies, yeah. So their priest would, like, write down what they saw in their dream, or pieces of artwork would be presented to them, and they would have to say, like, what feeling that piece of artwork invoked in them, or something along those lines, where they also were using these gods as prophets.
Well, and I also like how... Two things with Lightsong is that the reveal when Larimar finally tells him who he was is like, in your dreams, like, you're recounting my niece, like, perfectly.
Yeah. You're recounting, like, the ship that you're on, the, variety of the weather.
Yeah. Well, and I also like when they bring the gods' paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And Larimar is just like, yeah, it's just a bunch of color to me. But, like, Lightsong sees a thing in it, because the higher breath you have,
yeah,
the more attuned you are to colors. And so, like, Larimar doesn't have any... He does not have a god's level of breath.
Kind of like Magic like Eye.
Yeah, it's where, like a Magic Eye.
I've never gotten one of those things to work. I've never seen anything in a Magic Eye.
Still looking for that ship, huh?
I'm still looking for it.
So for Parlin, the kind of ranger character that Vivenna brings in, I have Oscar Isaac.
Wow, you went, like, deep on these characters.
Yeah.
I went with, like, all the main characters. I was like, I guess I'm
good
done.
Enough. And then, just because you don't... Spoilers, no. Again, because we're in spoilers. Harlan actually gets killed by Tonkfa or Dent.
Yeah.
And so Oscar Isaac, I think, is a good, like, surprise, because you don't expect... He's a pretty big star. You don't expect him to just die halfway through.
You know, and it was... Well, yeah. It was interesting at the very end with the fight and everything. How... Because Dent keeps on telling Vasher that he's like... Oh, you're not that great of a swordsman. I don't know
how... did you kill Arsteel?
Yeah. How did you do it? You must have had some sort of trick. And the trick was...
I love his trick.
Yeah. And it's amazing. He gives people some of his breath.
No, he gives them all of it. He transfers all of his breath.
That's right. Because you cannot transfer part of it. You have to transfer all or none.
Yeah. And you
so
can't...
he transfers all of his breath to somebody... And it gives them such a shock, because they're now seeing, like, things on a new scale.
It disables someone. So, and because you can't, like, refuse to accept it, you have to accept it. He gives his breath to Arsteel, presumably, and Dent, and they're incapacitated. And
for, a couple of seconds.
And it's enough for him to, like, just stab him through the heart.
Yeah. But then you have zero breath. You start back from level zero.
Yeah, well, and he's explaining this to, I think it's Vivenna, where he's like, breath is so valuable, no one would expect you to give it all away and then kill someone.
Yeah, because
you can't get it back.
Yeah, all that breath is wasted.
Yeah.
And that was just awesome. I really liked that.
Yeah.
That was super cool. I did not expect that. And I was like, that is a sneaky
fucking move. Yeah. But it works.
But you're back at ground zero. You're like, gotta start accumulating more breath. And it's interesting, is like, now he can't use the sword too, because the sword draws breath.
From breath.
Yeah, so.
So for Nightblood, for voices, I have Michael Fassbender.
Oh, yeah.
Just because Michael Fassbender's awesome.
Yeah.
For Lemmix, the Spymaster. From Idris, I have Leslie Jordan. He plays an old man, a guy named Cricket in American Horror Story Roanoke.
Huh. I need to watch American Horror Story.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you'll get all of the castings that I do, because apparently I just draw everything from American Horror Story. But he plays, I feel like he would be a good actor for someone who's elderly.
Yeah.
And someone who's... who has underhanded motives.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the other thing is that Lemmix was skimming money from the king.
Yeah.
to buy all of this breath, because breath is expensive, so he would just, like, pack out the money that he needed and just steal it.
Yeah, just be like, there we go.
Which at first I disbelieved because it was coming from Dent.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it makes sense. Like, why would he not?
Yeah, exactly.
He's just as corrupt.
Yeah.
So, that's it, as far as my cast.
Yeah, that would be it for my cast as well. I didn't go as in-depth.
Yeah.
But if you made it this far, hopefully you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Let us know, because it's something that we're going to try to do, cast books that already haven't been cast
haven't been adapted.
Yeah. But, I thought that was really fun.
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed that too. And,
We'll see you next time. The next book club book, like we said earlier, is Shining. So be boning up on that. We'll come out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, unfortunately, we won't do a cast of that one, since,
it's already a movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it.
Yep. Everybody, have a great day. Thank you for joining us.
Stay golden?
Sure. Pony stay boy? Golden.
Okay. All right. Stay golden, Pony
stay
boys.
Golden. And you know what? Try to see the world in a new color.
Yeah. Keep on plucking that chicken.
And keep on breathing those breaths.
Yep.
See ya.
Bye.